and welcome to The Bunker USA. I'm Gavin Essler. In the year of the US presidential election, voters will, as usual, judge the candidates. But how does history, or at least historians and presidential experts, judge presidents from the past? How does, say, Donald Trump stack up against Abraham Lincoln, or Harry Truman and Woodrow Wilson with Barack Obama and Joe Biden? The 2024 Presidential Greatness Project survey has some of the answers. These, of course, are a matter of judgment rather than science, and we can all have opinions and argue about the expert rankings. And so in that spirit, joining me to discuss who's up, who's down, and who is bottom of the pile, I'm delighted to welcome to the Bunker USA Professor Justin Vaughan of Coastal Carolina University. Hello, Justin.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, let's begin with the method. I mean, who decides the rankings and how do they decide? What sort of criteria are being used here?
Yeah, so what we do is we send out invitations to several hundred scholars of the presidency or presidential politics, and we invite them to participate in a survey in which they answer a number of questions, but most importantly for this part, they rate each American president on a scale of 0 to 100 in terms of 100 being the most great, 0 being the least great. And then what we do is we average the scores for each president across all the different respondents and then put them in rank order.
The order is fascinating, I have to say, but we'll get there in a second. But I just want to talk a little bit more about the method, because, you know, if you're trying to judge a John F. Kennedy who was assassinated with a Franklin Delano Roosevelt who was there for four terms, or most of the fourth term, that's so hard, isn't it? So difficult.
It's incredibly hard. And it gets even harder when we're talking about some of those forgotten presidents from the 19th century that nobody really knows a lot about. It really comes down to what individual scholars value, what they know, you know, characteristics of those presidents that are particularly important to either scholars or to American kind of political culture. And so there's a lot of factors that kind of go into the individual ratings of each one of these presidents.
I'm glad you mentioned some of the forgotten presidents of the 19th century, because I read through the list and thought, who the heck is that guy? But anyway, well, let's talk about the results. Who's at the top? What's the grouping at the top? Because they're all names that everybody will know.
Yeah, so there's three at the top, and they're really kind of separated from everyone else. It's Abraham Lincoln, clear consensus number one president. And then kind of neck and neck after Lincoln for number two is Franklin Delano Roosevelt and George Washington.
I don't think you'll have any controversy about those three being, you know, right at the top anyway. But Lincoln, obviously, he saved the Union. He saved the country. There would be no United States without him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when we look at the things that are culturally and also statistically associated with ideas of presidential greatness, Lincoln has them all, right? He was reelected. He was president in a time of a major crisis. He presided over the country during a time of great war. He did big things like issue the Emancipation Proclamation. He's a great rhetorician. And this doesn't necessarily make him great, although it does correlate with greatness rankings. At the end of all that, he was tragically assassinated.
I know. It's quite an extraordinary story. And Washington is another one. Of course, everybody would think of Washington, because again, without him, you wouldn't have your country.
That's right. The father of the country, the only president who ever was unanimously selected by our electoral college, again, reelected and established a lot of norms. There was no presidency before George Washington. And so a lot of what presidents still today do is based on choices that he made. You know, for example, he famously decided that after two terms, that was enough and he wasn't going to run for a third term. And it wasn't until the 1930s that Franklin Delano Roosevelt was able to challenge that tradition of serving more than two terms as president.
That's very interesting, because, of course, there was a revolt against that after he passed, and people said, you know, actually, Washington was right, Roosevelt was wrong, two terms. But it's very difficult to argue against Roosevelt staying on in the middle of a war.
That's right. There's always that don't change horses in midstream mentality. And not only was it in the middle of a war, but he was also the president who had, you know, led the nation out of the Great Depression thanks to his New Deal package of reforms, and had been very, very active in terms of developing and maintaining relationship with the American people. You know, he really, I wouldn't say he pioneered it, but he exemplified the use of modern communications technology in terms of presidential communication with the public with his fireside chats, and was kind of constantly communicating with the American people through the technology of radio at the time, informing them on what was happening with the economy, what was happening with the war, why the government was doing the things they were doing, and kind of urging them to kind of keep the faith as we emerge from this economic disaster and then in this, you know, calamitous kind of global military affair.
Of course, the thing that unites all of them is they were presidents in time of a crisis and a conflict, and they rose above it. And, well, certainly the view of most of us is they all did the right thing, didn't they? They kept the country together, created the country, and stood up against fascism and Nazism, even though that was not necessarily a popular thing to do in the 1930s in America.
That's exactly right. The ability to face a crisis is kind of important to whether or not you're going to have the opportunity to be great. Of course, you have to succeed, right? There's a quote from Bill Clinton that I won't get the wording right, but basically, to paraphrase, he spoke about how, you know, he hadn't really faced a crisis like that, at least not of his own making, and so didn't have that opportunity for greatness that such a crisis could have afforded. Instead, he was the president during a time of relative peace and prosperity, and so he does well in this survey, but he wouldn't ever be considered in the same names as a Lincoln or a Washington or a Roosevelt.
I lived in the United States during the Clinton years and some other times too. And I thought that was very interesting because Clinton, of course, he was a polarizing figure. And of course, he was also impeached. And there was all kinds of things about his private life and so on. But he did score quite well, didn't he? I mean, people did view those times as perhaps just good times rather than times when we had to face a terrible crisis.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that we're far enough past it now that even though you can't dismiss the polarization of the era and the, you know, there are government shutdowns or impeachment politics that you mentioned, but it was also before the Tea Party emerged. It was before MAGA emerged. And so it almost seems like the good old days when things were nice and cheery, forgetting for a moment about the kind of partisan warfare between Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich and so on.
I was interested that both Obama and Biden actually did quite well because they're fairly recent. It's very difficult to take a historical judgment, especially since Joe Biden is still obviously the president of the United States.
Yes. And so I'll take that last comment first. There's an ongoing, I think, critique of these kinds of polls about the idea of whether or not you should include the current president, because we can't know what the story is, right? We can only judge up to what we know right now. And then I think you could add on top of that, that we conducted this in an election year where the current president is very likely going to face off against the most recent president. And so there's even more kind of political dimension to it than ordinarily would be the case. But Joe Biden does very well in the survey. And I think a lot of it is due to the scholars' focus on the kind of substantive accomplishments of the administration. And I think a dismissal of a lot of the criticism of the administration as kind of partisan sniping, whether or not a person agrees with that dismissal or they agree with the quality of President Biden's accomplishments, I think can be up for debate. But he comes in very well, 14th. So he's in the top third of presidents. But I will say, I expect there to be a lot of fluctuation over the coming years about his reputation. You know, if he defeats Donald Trump or if he loses to Donald Trump, will matter greatly in how he's assessed in terms of history. If he suddenly between now and then decides to step down and allow someone else to carry the mantle, that's going to matter greatly in terms of how presidents assess him. And I think also over time, when some of the harsh judgments and negative assessments of President Trump have subsided a little bit, that maybe some of the reverse of that that Joe Biden benefits from will also kind of fade away.
That brings us on to who's bottom of the pile, and you might as well go ahead and tell us.
Well, it's President Trump. He's at the bottom. He's number 45. This is the third time that we've conducted the survey in the last decade, and the last time that we conducted it was in 2018, and he was president then. He'd been president for about a year, and he was bottom of the pile then too. So he hasn't gone down, but he hasn't gone up either. And so to give you an idea of the difference, as I said, we allow our respondents to measure presidents on a scale of 0 to 100, with 100 being greatest. Abraham Lincoln, our greatest president, has a average score of 93.9, right? So that's pretty good.
Extraordinary.
Donald Trump's score is 10.9. So, much, much closer to 0 than to 100.
Okay, well, I'm going to put on my Trumpist hat now and say you're all pointy-headed intellectuals who don't like him because he just breaks the mold of politics or something like that. I mean, that's obviously what he will say, isn't it? That kind of thing.
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of emails that have said that in far more colorful terms.
I'm being polite, but I mean, is that part of the point? I mean, if you're a historical expert, you are precisely that, you know, the kind of experts that somehow Donald Trump just doesn't get along with. Let's be polite here.
That's right. And I think that there is some truth to that. I think that, that certainly when a person looks at a rating such as these and they have their preferred president, they want to see how that president does. And if that president doesn't do well, then it's an illegitimate survey, right? If that president does well, then clearly we got it right. In fact, I did a piece a few years ago where I was asked to assess ex-presidents, so how the presidents did in their lives after they left the presidency. And I had some critical things to say about Teddy Roosevelt, and I got a fair amount of negative feedback about that too. So it's not just the Trumpists that don't like it when their guy doesn't do well. That being said, President Trump did approach his presidency in ways that are different than presidential norms would suggest. And he didn't embrace many of the traditional approaches to the presidency. And that's something that I think has been viewed negatively by these scholars. And so if a pro-Trump person were to say to me, well, you just don't appreciate the way in which President Trump approached this position differently, he wanted to drain the swamp, he wasn't going to play the DC game, I think I would say, yeah, you're right, that a lot of these folks will penalize him for that. And so I think, and we have a piece where that we've written in since the release of the survey, where we basically say that many of the things that Trump supporters like most about him are the things that have caused him to be penalized in surveys like this.
That's a very interesting point. Well, it's a very interesting point about a divided nation, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I mean, so completely divided that, up is down and down is up.
Some of the ones near the bottom, you already suggested this at the top of our conversation, you know, Harding, Harrison, Buchanan. A lot of people will be searching for Google to try and figure out which guy was that, you know? I mean, maybe that tells you everything that you need to know about them.
Yeah, it does. And so if you look at the group of people that are at the bottom along with President Trump, you've got, you know, Presidents Buchanan, President Andrew Johnson, you got President Franklin Pierce. These are all people who are at the bottom because they're also very controversial. They were in different ways failed presidents. But then you also have poor William Henry Harrison, who was not a bad president. He had the misfortune of dying 31 days after taking office and, you know, caught pneumonia during his speech, passed away a few weeks later. And so he's considered a not great president, not because he failed in the issue of slavery or because he failed to embrace presidential norms, because he didn't wear a coat or a scarf, apparently. So there are some of those that are at the bottom that are, you know, we remember them from the 19th century and they're bad, or we remember them from the 19th century because they were hardly there. But then there's other names like a Millard Fillmore or a John Tyler, and you have to, even the presidential experts scratch their head for a minute and say, okay, what do I remember about that person? And I think it's exacerbated a little bit in our survey. Ours is a multidisciplinary survey, but it's disproportionately focused on political scientists, which is what my colleague and I are. And unlike the other surveys where they're entirely populated by historians, political scientists focus on the modern institution of the presidency. And so so we maybe read a book or two that mentioned Millard Fillmore, but that's not the focus of the kind of work that we do, unlike historians who take a broader, more descriptive perspective on the institution.
Yeah, and when you mentioned Harrison, William Henry Harrison, I mean, like anybody who's read anything about American politics, I have only read the bit that you just quoted, essentially, that he gave his inauguration speech without a hat, without a coat, without a scarf. It was very cold. He got something like flu and died. I mean, right. That's not great judgment, but as you say, it didn't make him a bad person, unfortunately.
Right, and so, yeah, I mean, but it does mean he can't be great because he accomplished nothing.
Were there any surprises for you in this? I mean, the people are bobbing up and down a little bit. As I say, I was surprised Bill Clinton scored so well because of the scandals that dogged the end of his presidency. But you're absolutely right. Those were good times. This was the time we talked about essentially a unipolar world. The Cold War was won. There seemed to be mostly peace. There was not everywhere, but mostly peace. It wasn't bad. But were there any other surprises?
You know, I think I was personally a little surprised that Joe Biden came in as high as he did. I understand it, but I wouldn't have put him at 30, but I didn't expect him to be all the way up at 14 either. One of the things that's surprising, actually, speaking of Bill Clinton, we will ask our respondents, and they're anonymous, so I think they're comfortable answering these questions, but we'll ask them if they're Republican, Democratic, Independent. We'll ask them if they're liberal, moderate, or conservative. And then we sometimes will look at the difference and see if there are differences across these partisan identities in terms of how people are rated or ranked. And as you would expect, there's a lot of polarization in those results, right? So there's a big difference between what Democrats and Republican respondents think about Barack Obama or George W. Bush. And that's true for all of the modern presidents, with the exception of Bill Clinton. The Republicans and the Democrats look at him pretty much the same. And actually, the Republicans are just a little tiny bit higher on him than the Democrats are. And I cannot tell you why, but when I read that, I actually went and made sure we hadn't made a mistake with the data, because it was very surprising to me. And so I think there's this kind of peace and prosperity nostalgia thing going on, but that doesn't explain to me why the Republicans suddenly like him.
That's a very interesting point. I have to say, I may have a clue to that. Maybe, can I share it with you?
Yeah, please.
Which is that when I met Bill Clinton and he talked about being a new Democrat, I asked a lot of people in the Democratic Party what he meant by that. And one of them said to me, you'd better remain anonymous. He said, a new Democrat means anything we were in the past that you don't like, we're not that anymore. And anything that we were in the past that you do like, we're still that.
That's actually about right. I think of the new Democrats as that last wave of Democrats that were still able to win in the South, right? And,
yeah,
and
exactly.
You know, the next decade they weren't. But you have the Al Gores and the Bill Clintons that carried that mantle, you know, and then the door was closed behind them.
Can I ask you a slightly unfair question, but when will we have a woman president?
Well, I don't know. I think we came very close to having one when Donald Trump won. Hillary Clinton got more votes than any male candidate had prior to that. And there's always a chance that we might have one come next year in the event that either Donald Trump or Joe Biden doesn't run or is unable to run. Nikki Haley's running for president against Donald Trump. She's very, very, very unlikely to defeat him. But in the event that he's not able to run for president for legal reasons or other reasons, I think Nikki Haley would compete against President Biden very, very well. Conversely, if Joe Biden were to decide not to step down, it's likely that, you know, you'd have a Kamala Harris as a candidate or even a Michelle Obama. I think that if I was a leader on the Democratic National Committee, I'd do everything I could to find out how to convince Michelle Obama to run for president, because if she ran against Donald Trump or probably any other Republican, she'd win. So there's a chance that if something unusual happens over the course of the rest of the year, we might have one soon, but I think we will definitely have one in the near future.
It's very interesting. I heard Nikki Haley say recently, there will be a woman president in the next 4 years because either I will win, or if Joe Biden wins against Donald Trump, which is what she predicts, then he will push back and we will have Kamala Harris. So, I mean, we're agreed it's going to happen, but perhaps this year, perhaps not.
Yeah.
let's move on. Just a couple of other thoughts. Is there anything that you have seen that means that we should start recarving Mount Rushmore? I mean, we've got George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, and Theodore Roosevelt. I just wondered whether we have got the wrong Roosevelt up there, according to the historian survey.
Well, I think we do. Although, I mean, Theodore Roosevelt comes in very well. In fact, other than Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the top four presidents are the ones that are on there. But Franklin Delano Roosevelt does come in ahead of his, I think, second cousin, Teddy Roosevelt. And we have asked a question consistently in each of these surveys, if it was up to you, who would the next president be on Mount Rushmore? And it is consistently and overwhelmingly Franklin Roosevelt, which makes sense. Not only does he come in, you know, either second or third in all of our surveys and similar surveys, but he's by far and away the most impactful president of the 20th century. He created the modern institution of the presidency. He served four terms. He led the nation through dual crises, created the New Deal. The policy and political legacy of Franklin Roosevelt can't be overstated. So he would definitely be the next person. But it's also a little unfair because I don't think there's actually room for another face out there. I think that they're kind of size limited. So as much as you might deserve it, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think you could do cosmetic surgery on something that size. Just one final thought, which struck me when I was going through the list and thinking about things, and also in our conversation, which is, we are so involved now in these difficult times, the war in Europe, the prospect of confrontation with China, the difficulties about migration, the huge turmoil in the United States between Donald Trump and President Biden and so on. Do we sometimes forget some of the really awful times that the United States has gone through before, which is why we should celebrate some of these presidents, because they managed somehow to keep it together?
Yeah, I think that that's key. I think that when we celebrate these presidents, you know, and we just had President's Day in the United States a few days ago, and when we celebrate these presidents, we tend to think about, you know, their heroic achievements and kind of the Walt Disney version of their presidencies. But I think it makes sense to think about what it was that they were being heroic about. What were they binding together? What were the problems that were happening at the time? You know, whether it's mass unemployment or social unrest, or was it ending the institution of slavery, and you know, or Lyndon Johnson, who I always think should come in a little bit higher, who was president over a time when we're, you know, making massive strides forward in civil rights and voting rights and equality. And a lot of the focus then is on the achievements, but not enough on what it was that had to be achieved and how bad it was before.
Justin, thank you very much. I've enjoyed our conversation. Professor Justin Vaughan of Coastal Carolina University. And listeners, you can take a look at the findings of the 2024 Presidential Greatness Project survey for yourself by following the link in the show notes. And if you enjoyed this conversation and want to hear more conversations just like this, why not back us on Patreon? For just £3 a month, you get access to all our episodes first, ad-free, and access to all of our exclusive merchandise. I'm Gavin Essler, and you've been listening to The Bunker.
Hello, I'm Ros Taylor with news of Oh God, What Now? The politics podcast that's never going to leave its voter ID at home. On Friday's show, it's 6 months until the US election and Donald Trump is stuck sitting on trial in a New York courthouse. Is he bulletproof or can Joe Biden turn around the polls? In the second half, it's local elections week, but we've steadily taken power away from local authorities. What if we gave it back? And in the extra bit for supporters, is there a right level of ruthlessness in politics? That's Oh God, What Now? With me, Ros Taylor, Raphael Baer, Hannah Fearn, guest Nikki McCann Ramirez, out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Bunker USA was written and presented by Gavin Essler. The producer was Chris Jones, with audio production by Simon Williams and Robin Lieben. The managing editor is Jacob Jarvis. The group editor is Andrew Harrison. Music is by Kenny Dickinson and artwork is by James Parrott. The Bunker USA is a Podmasters production.